Welcome to Correctional Commentary, a podcast about the ins and outs of corrections, an uncensored view from behind the walls, hosted by Robbie and Caleb.
That would help.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Correctional Commentary. We are your host, Robbie and Caleb. I'm Caleb. That is Robbie, your favorite correctional podcast on air all the time, completely uncensored and completely unscripted. Today we have a very special guest named Alice. Alice, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Howdy, hey. My name is Alice, and I am a correctional officer in the proud state of Minnesota.
Okay, so we will just jump right into this. Alice, how long have you been in corrections?
So, listening to your first introduction, I realized I'm definitely a baby officer. I've only been an officer since 2022. But I'm third generation. And I love my job, and I couldn't be more grateful to have it.
You are what we call a dynasty in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very
and,
proud.
You know, there's nothing, definitely nothing wrong with. We love having people fresh, you know, with a couple years in on, because it really gives us an insight of new ideas, and also, you know, there's never such thing as bad ideas, really. I mean, because what works will get weeded out, and what doesn't, you know, is, well, something like that. But so you've been in,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I know, right? So you said you've been in corrections for 2 years. So with your short 2 year and tenure, is this something that you see going the long haul, like your, you know, like your other two generations?
I plan on being in my facility as long as possible. I want to be the dinosaur on the facility. I want to be so old that Watch Command is afraid to tell me off, because I will shout at them that I knew their grandparents when I was young. So.
I love that. I love hearing that. We don't get to hear that very often, especially in such a field that has a high turnover rate. And I love hearing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very, very hard to find. So, Caleb, take it away.
Okay. So, Alice, we got some more questions for you. And I guess the question I'm going to ask, obviously, I feel like that you can definitely see yourself retiring from corrections, so I'm not really going to touch on that as much. But I will ask you, what does being a CO mean to you, especially with your dynasty that you currently have, your family dynasty being in corrections? What does that mean to you?
It means, oh God, that's a really broad question. It means food on the table, but it also means that I have the potential to either do a whole lot of good or a whole lot of bad, depending upon my choices. I can protect my community because the people that I work with are my community. I'm working in a community that I grew up in. A lot of my coworkers are people that I've known since grade school. There are not a lot of jobs up here that pay as well as corrections. So it's one of those things where if you know about it, you're going to go into it, because the pickings are slim. But once you're there, it's a whole nother family.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, I mean, I would say probably makes for a great team, especially knowing each other for as long as you have in a small town. And, you know, that could be a good thing and a bad thing at the same time.
I would definitely say it could be a bad thing, because, and Alice, you correct me if I'm wrong, I would say not everybody in your small town has taken the same journey, and some have ended up on the other side of that uniform inside your prison. Would I be wrong to say something like that?
Definitely. I actually keep an eye on the county rosters, the surrounding counties around my facility. And I just keep an eye on that, because I know if any of those guys end up in DOC custody, I need to file paperwork. Mm-hmm. If I know them, I've already had to do it a couple times. Thankfully, I haven't crossed paths with anyone who would have known me. before this time. A lot of them end up at different facilities. If you state that you know this person, you're not comfortable with them in your facility, they can kind of work with you.
I can relate to that as well, Alice. When I was still in corrections, and for side note for all of our viewers and new listeners out there, I've been out of corrections now for over around about 6 months, but I spent 5.5 years in. And when I was still in it just a very short time ago, I actually had a ex-family member. He was a family member by marriage, was no longer a family member at that point. He came to our facility at the time, and I actually had to go and file paperwork and let everybody in administration know, and I wasn't allowed to be around him for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very weird situation coming across people like that you knew from on the streets. Puts you in a very vulnerable situation too.
Oh yeah, and even to add on to that, I worked in a local county jail in a small town as well where we're at, and it was interesting when I was a correctional deputy seeing these people that I grew up with, that were friends with my family, getting brought in for an array of charges, you know, domestic assault, DUI, whatever. And I had to book them. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I had to book a very, very close family member that him and I grew up together. We were like siblings. I had to book him in and fingerprint him. And that was an interesting feeling. I didn't know how to feel. I spoke to him and got that point. I don't know how many years. So it was the first time seeing him, and he was in jail. So was I, but I was wearing a uniform and he wasn't. So,
yeah. So Alice, so with you being a third generation in corrections, you're probably pretty familiar with the phrase of, you know, to be your brother's keeper. If you don't, what would that phrase mean to you?
Well, so we have a lot of hires right now. We're experiencing almost like a change in like a turnover of staff, but it's not people quitting or getting fired. It's people retiring. Oh, wow. And so we have a lot of young, very, very young, like 18, 19, 20, frontal lobe isn't fully developed kind of kids just running around freshly uniformed. And so a lot of my brother's keeper activity is just telling him, hey, we really can't have you talking like that. We can't have you acting like that. You're going to put yourself and the people around you in danger if you don't like kind of reel it in, because a lot of them tend to forget where they're at and what we do. And they get really comfortable very quickly. It's like, we still have a job to do.
Yeah. I love that answer, because a lot of people will say, you know, it's responding when they need you. And, you know, I don't really, you know, that's just having somebody's back, but you know, your brother's keeper, that's, you know, protecting your brother whenever you're protecting them from themselves. It's kind of like that segment we did on that inmate that got beat to death up in New York. I mean, how that happened and not one person stepped up and, you know, protected them from themselves is beyond us. Mm-hmm. So I love that answer.
I do too. And Alice, so that makes it good. I asked the question, have you had somebody check you that in retrospect you were very thankful for? Because I mean, that phrase goes both ways, from our guests on the show to other officers that aren't necessarily on the show, back the other way around. So you had that happen to you?
When I first started, I was an M. My line has always been, I'm helpful, not nice, which goes hand in hand with working nights, because I work nights. Mm-hmm. And so I don't see a lot of people, but I see a lot of my team. I do regular routes, and it's very easy for people to forget, myself included, that when you go through the magnet doors, there's a certain attitude you got to carry. There's a certain professionalism you have to carry, and laughing and joking, it's real easy to forget about those magnets in the doors, and how once you're on the other side of those, it's a shared place, because you're outnumbered.
Yeah.
So
I like, okay. Yeah. I like that. Thank you. Thank you
for sharing. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can definitely relate to that because for me, it's more whenever I put my uniform and I take it off.
Yep.
More type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's like I don't even whenever I walk in from home, I don't even really talk to my wife before I take my uniform off, just because I'm in a different mindset.
Mm-hmm. I struggle with that as well. Thankfully, I don't have to as much anymore since I've been out of it. But I realized here recently that curse has been following me around. Still, it's something it's hard to shake than what I thought it was going to be. So. Robbie, do you have a question you want to ask? Because if not, I do have one of a particular question.
Sure. So, in your short couple years in corrections, how has it changed you as a person and opened up, I guess, your perception to how the world really is?
Oh, that again, another tough question.
We're just full of them tonight, aren't we?
Yeah.
I want to say that it's made me a little more closed off. It's made me a little more cautious. Walking through grocery stores and in public places, I'm a lot more aware of the exits. Behavioral cues are just like interacting with strangers, but it's also I had a thing go down at Walmart where I was interacting with a cashier who was just off. Real off, and it was just like she was just having a bad day, and I actually had the foresight to stop and ask her if she was doing okay, and I was like, are you overstimulated mid-conversation? She's like, oh my gosh, and she opened up. So it's given me some more skills into interacting with people, but it's definitely made me more aware of doors and exits and locked doors and things that might set people off.
And that right there, yeah, and I love hearing that because that's almost like the positive effects because it, in a way that kind of makes everybody safer in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that was almost – stuff like that, that was almost immediate for me, like after my first week working, working in prison and, you see the violence and what these people are capable of, and it makes you really hyper vigilant.
Well, in some cases you're lucky enough to get training like a crisis intervention training, CIT. I've not been privy to that, but they feed it to us in small spoonfuls during trainings, and it gives you valuable skills that you might not otherwise have to connect with people in public.
So, and you say that, it makes an interesting point based off what you said and how the job has changed you. I'd like to ask you, if you could talk to your rookie self, what would you say to the rookie Alice?
Shut up.
Well, I mean, shut up. You've had a very short tenure thus far, but clearly the job has changed you for the better, and we're very thankful for that. I know it changed me fairly quickly, and I even wonder if I could go back in time, what would I say to my rookie self? So I just want to ask you that same question, is if you could talk to rookie Alice, what would seasoned Alice say to rookie Alice?
Oh, I'd tell her to shut up. I'm sorry if that wasn't clear enough.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just telling me to shut up.
No. I'm sorry. No. My apologies.
I was about to jump in like, Caleb, that's what you meant.
I did. Okay, listen, to all of our listeners out there, I'm not the brightest out there. I mean, but and I'm sorry. So why shut up?
Before this, I was a CNA, so it was a lot more about not so much sitting back, but trying to help as much as possible and not observing situations. And that's a skill to be able to sit back and observe situations and just let things sometimes play out without being elbows deep in it. Mm-hmm. So. I would definitely encourage that.
Yeah, and I wish I wish more seasoned officers would tell some of the OJTs whenever they come in just to be quiet, because you would be shocked the amount of information that I hear and just sitting back and just watching.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting back and just kind of blending in, because that's really our, you know, information and knowledge is our biggest weapon that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be the difference of, you know, one of us going home, or one of our, you know, our brothers and sisters going home.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, when I was training, I trained a bunch of officers over my career. I had a few over the time, and Robbie probably did as well. And Alice, I don't know if you've trained any new officers yet at this point, if you're that far enough in your career or not, based on your department's situation. But I know, at least with mine, I would sometimes, if they were talking a lot, I would say, tell the rookie, hush for a minute, use your eyes to gather information. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to gather as much information you can about what you're seeing with inmate behavior, and you tell me what you saw. Sometimes they were effective at it. Sometimes I realized, oh crap, they're not going to make it because they can't observe.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time.
So, mm-hmm.
You see that. But I do like that answer, shut up, even though I completely disregarded and I thought you were
went right over your head.
Yeah. Again, guys, all listeners out there, this is the first time tuning in the show. I'm not the brightest bulb in the shed, nor am I the sharpest knife in the drawer. Couldn't find my way out of a paper.
So, Alice, out of your couple years now, what would be your most memorable moment that you've had in corrections? You know, whether it be positive or negative, whether it be related to inmate or to, you know, staff.
My most positive?
Sure.
Positive or negative, whichever one stands out, you know, whichever one taught you the most. Because our whole point of doing this is to, you know, to help people that are, you know, looking to go into corrections or gain more knowledge about it. So, you know, are any details or interactions that we can give someone to give them some insight, you know, that's our ultimate goal.
Recently, I had usually when I get out of work, I try not to think about a whole lot that went down, because it's usually it's either really bad or just very dull. So, in my first 6 months, we had a fight in it was 5:45 or 5 in the morning. I was about to get forced, and we had a fight in a 6-man dorm go on. And I was the most senior officer on that unit. I was only 6 months in. The other guy was a month in. Yeah. Wow. Well, and we were running teams of two. It was a unit with lots, like 150 dudes. And we were watching the cameras, and I wish there's so many things that I look back on now with that experience. And that was the turning point for me, where I was like, I can in fact do this. But I made a lot of mistakes in that incident that could have been way worse. And thankfully, we got it under control, myself and my partner. But I got coated in chemical and then got to spend another eight hours sitting in it. So, that was fun. It was fun is the wrong word. It was, I'm saying that with sarcasm. It was not fun, but I learned a lot from that.
I understood that.
Well, that's why I preach to everyone that I train of, you would much rather work on perfecting your de-escalation skills over, you know, brute force, because we're going to have times where de-escalation is just not even in the realm of possibility, but it's 9 times out of 10, most issues can get, you know, solved that way. And unfortunately, whenever we have a bunch of new young officers, they're usually all gung-ho and you're not going to talk to me like that. And just, they don't have the ability to step back.
I don't have the ability to drop that pride and realize that it's not, it's just business. It's nothing personal.
I've lived through that whole pride experience being a woman in the facility, where the staff is predominantly men and the facility is men. It's a constant trying to check people without making them feel like their man card's been stolen. Yeah. So it's a challenge. I see that.
So what have you done to adapt and, like, I guess, persevere and, you know, thrive as a woman in a predominantly male work environment?
That's a great question.
Clear and concise communication. Sometimes you just got to let them have it. If they're going to approach you and say, hey, it's 30 below outside and I think you're a little fragile to be wandering around 30 below. Sometimes you just got to let them. You just got to let them. And that's for coworkers. Like, when it comes to the residing population, a lot of it is an explanation as in, I'm helpful, not nice. If you don't need something, if you don't need help with something, then I need you to move along. And most of the time, that's where it ends. Like, the conversation ends there. They'll take off. They'll go back to their space. They'll go back to a day room. They'll leave me alone.
Yeah. So, Alice, I do have a question for you. Is another question for you. What is something, if anything, that you would like the public to know about our craft, the world of corrections, something that may or may not be known or may get misconstrued by Hollywood?
We're just people. We're just people. We're not the police. We're just people. We're just out here doing the job. We help as much as we can. There are bad officers. There are people who definitely go on, like, wild power trips because they don't get to take a vacation. But we are just people. And at the end of the day, we're just, you know, trying to get by like everyone else.
Okay. Yeah, so you mentioned earlier that you have a, like, most of your staff is aging out, which I love hearing. I love hearing that.
Because it's unheard of.
You're kind of having a reverse issue of, you know, people just coming in and quitting. So with that kind of staffing issues that y'all have, like, do you have any ideas on how facilities can, like, help with the staffing issues that they're facing?
Well, so this is my personal opinion, but I feel like the age should be raised to 25. Because of what we know about the brain, about development, about people and self-control, and you want people who will stay. So 25, a lot of people are a lot more settled. They're not hopping into this because this is what mom and dad did, and they don't want to leave, so they pick up what the family trade is. And I waited almost a decade to decide that it was time, but not everyone does that. So I wish they would institute some sort of better age policies, mm-hmm. but you can't really stop people from applying for the military at 18, so you can't stop them from applying for our job.
Go as far as saying, and maybe not instead of 25, just at least, because I don't know about your department, but I know where Robbie and I are at, the minimum age is 18.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that it's not 25. We could at least make it 21. I feel like 21 is very feasible.
Mm-hmm.
I started in corrections when I was 21. I can tell you right now, how that started when I was 18. It would have been a whole different world for me. I was an idiot at 21, but I was even more of an idiot at 18 than 21. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've heard a lot of, because I ask people questions like that too, even off camera. And that's the first time that I've heard about, like, raising it that drastically.
Yeah.
And I could see some, you know, like, some positive and negatives.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I'll definitely have to think on that one. We'll have to.
Maybe
we'll have to bring that up. Yeah, we'll have to bring that up on a segment or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a very interesting topic on something like that.
For sure. For sure.
You got something to say?
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask, at least this will probably, as of right now, be my last question. Why do you feel that corrections are not seen as a branch of first responders? Because I feel like there's kind of a misnomer there.
I see this as first responders because, so I'm utility. I do everything. I work the units. I run squad. You talked about the other day about being fire, EMT, and a peace worker. It's utility. It's utility at its highest. And I don't know why people don't realize that we're part of the law enforcement family. I think it's a Hollywood thing because when you look at how we're portrayed, we're the clowns, we're the joke. And, you know, people just take that for gospel and it's really disappointing.
It definitely is. People don't realize that how actually honorable and respectful that our profession is. And I've actually met patrol officers that have said, listen, if they forced me to come in here to work where you guys are at, I would quit in a heartbeat. I can't do y'all's job.
Mm-hmm.
But and
they're getting all the glory that on.
So. Yeah, and I listened to a current police officer say it perfectly, that a lot of the police force that are currently out there, and you can tell just by interacting with them, mm-hmm. that they need to learn how to talk to people.
Yeah.
And that's something, like, a lot of interactions that I have with police officers, whether it be getting pulled over, whether it be on the street, you know, a lot of them lack that ability to be able to, I guess, kind of gel with everybody and kind of move along the way that you should, mm-hmm. and also de-escalate, because that is 99% of our job is to de-escalate situations. And he made a comment that if you wanted to fix the police force for the better, make all the police officers go work a year in corrections first.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've brought that up with other fellow colleagues, not just in corrections, but on patrol as well. Alex, I'm going to ask, how would you feel if that was made a new rule? I know you talked about maybe raising the age limit, but what if, in addition to raising the age limit to 25, that also became a requirement?
That would be fantastic. In Minnesota currently, as a correctional officer, you have a year-long probation period before you're officially signed in as a CO2. And it definitely cuts the fat, but it also, you get to see people grow. Mm-hmm. And that's fun. Mm-hmm. But it would be amazing to see police officers have to learn those skills of, you know, having to actually see the same people day in and day out, because they're lucky. I shouldn't say they're lucky. Their position being different, because they aren't going to see the same person twice unless they're rolling through the same community all the time. And a lot of the communities are larger. So unless you're in a small town, you're not likely to run across the same people every day. And so those de-escalation skills are less practical, because they're like, oh, I can just give this person a ticket, roll away. I can give them an ear tax, ticket them, walk away. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they had to interact with that person the next day and the next day and the next day.
Well, and I think that with them going have to work a year in correction, it also teach them a lot of respect. Because a lot of those, most officers, police officers on the street, they lack that sense of respect unless they've gotten into like a bad altercation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not something that you really think about until you are surrounded by, you know, by an inmate population, a criminal population.
You know, I can tell you that when I first got in my rookie year, I thought I was Big Billy Badass, thought I knew everything, pissed vinegar. And I got humbled. And I'm very thankful for that. And I can tell you right now that changed my, that changed the trajectory of my entire career and how I was an, as an officer. I feel like that had I not got that check in, that gut check, I would have got myself hurt.
Yeah, definitely. So Alice, that's pretty much all the questions that we've ran through. So I'll leave the end of this to, if you have anything that you'd like to say, or any advice that we haven't touched on, especially to, you know, female, that females that are looking into being a correctional officer, and if they're like nervous, apprehensive, you know, just the floor is yours, the mic's yours, if you have anything you'd like to say.
So I'd like to tell anyone who's looking, especially women who's looking at becoming a correctional officer, 100% the women on this one, helpful, not nice, is your guideline. Like, you can be really helpful without ever having to overextend yourself, without having to be like customer service on another planet. Like, you don't. You can be helpful without overextending. And the only people who are going to lecture you about smiling or being overly nice, or, oh, you need to just be nice, are the people who are men who aren't going to be walking in your shoes, because you are responsible for you as much as they are responsible for you. And so that, there's that. My question though is, so you guys mentioned that you're in different states. What is the, I almost want to say, what is your take on the political atmosphere as far as law enforcement goes? I know that
what do you mean?
Political is how?
Well, I know they recently, I heard a whisper that they were going to make assaulting an officer a felony recently. There was a bill that passed, and I felt like that was comforting, because in a lot of cases when we're assaulted, sometimes it's just kind of like, we'll put charges on them, but they're going to kind of wiggle their way out of that. There's going to be steps where they can kind of negotiate it down to a non-felony.
Yeah. I don't know about other states, but in the state that we're in, it is, if we get assaulted, it is assault on a law enforcement officer. I do know that, but
okay.
I think the big thing is I would love to see the facility in the states not be like, hey, if you want to press charges, you have to go, because that's the thing about where we're at. Mm-hmm. If we want to press charges after we get assaulted, we get, you know, checked out by medical, and that's mm-hmm. if, you know, hope, Lord forbid, it's nothing major. But then we have to go to, you know, to the local police station, and we have to file charges.
And that's a whole lot of hoops to jump through.
Yeah. I mean, but it's absolutely something that, you know, and it's something I tell inmates. Mm-hmm. If the ones that want to threaten me that, oh, I'll just have my buddies and we'll jump you, I'm like, go ahead. I say, you're going to catch another 10 years on your sentence. Mm-hmm. And they kind of look, like, yeah, mm-hmm. for one hit, that's all it takes. And mm-hmm. I wish that would be a little more well known in the prison setting, because a lot of inmates don't even know that, mm-hmm. especially the young kids.
Oh yeah, and then they get gut checked really quick. I mean, I've seen some young kids come in, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 year sentence, nothing in the grand scheme of things as far as having to do time. They'll wait, you know, they'll be in maybe like half that, they'll have half that done, getting ready to go out on paper and parole, and they do something stupid, let the tempers get the better of them, whatever. Parole's gone, and then they'll get 10 years added onto their sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I do, I wish it was more well known, because yeah. there are officers that don't even know that you can go file outside charges.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish it wasn't even something we had to do. So I'm 1,000% for it. I hope that me and Caleb, we can get a big enough platform to where we can actually, you know, move some changes and where it needs to go, and bring a lot of, you know, and that's why we're here. We're here to bring stuff to light and just be real with everybody. That's good though. I like hearing stuff like that, because that's something that I haven't even thought about bringing up. And it is something that I tell inmates daily, weekly, sometimes daily. of, you know, whenever they want to threaten me. I'm like, go ahead. I was like, I'll take 90 days off and with you'll catch an extra 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And so Alice, I know we're on the tail end of this thing. So I just want to ask you one last thing. Do you have any other questions for Robbie and or myself?
No, sir.
All right. Well, Alice, I want to say thank you again for coming on the show with us and being our very, very special guest. We're praying for you. We're praying for your department and your whole facility. Watch your six. And yeah, we'll hopefully get to have you on in the future. And maybe at that point, you'll be Sergeant Alice or Lieutenant or whatever. So
I have already taken my sergeant's test. So
awesome. Awesome.
Fingers crossed.
We hope that.
Good luck.
For you. Good luck. Thank you. And yeah, we hope to see you down the road and stay safe.
You guys have a safe evening. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
All right, until next time, everybody. Bye.